It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. As we transition into 2020, this morning we consider where the Ohio Valley has been in the last decade, what to expect this election year, and what it took to get here.
The United States, we forget that first democracy didn't include women. It was a democracy for wealthy white men. Where we are now, those rights had to be fought for every step of the way. And we still have a long way to go.
Stay with us. This is West Virginia Morning. With the new year, we are leaving a decade of dramatic change for the Ohio Valley. The economy improved, but slowly. The coal industry declined sharply. And the addiction crisis took a terrible toll. The Ohio Valley Resource has a look at the trends that shaped the region over the past 10 years. And the data behind those trends, Becca Schimmel has the story.
Individual incomes have increased in Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia, but they still lag behind the rest of the country. Our data reporter Alexandra Koenig took a look at what the data say about how our region has changed. She started by looking at income growth.
Overall, incomes across the Ohio Valley are increasing, but they are still behind the national rate of 9%. West Virginia is increasing the fastest, but incomes in Kentucky are growing the slowest.
We spoke to University of Kentucky economist Michael Clark. He was surprised to see Kentuckians' incomes growing slower than those in West Virginia, where he says the state is facing an isolated recession.
When you're looking at it and you're comparing West Virginia to Kentucky and you're seeing their average wages go up, that's really masking a lot of the problems that West Virginia has faced, because they've been seeing a decrease in the number of jobs and a decrease in total wages.
Allie, when you looked at jobs in our region, what changes did you see?
Not surprising to anyone who follows our reporting, we've seen a lot of losses in the mining industry. While mining has remained the highest paying industry in West Virginia, overall in the Ohio Valley, we've seen a 50% decrease in mining employment since 2009.
Some have dubbed President Barack Obama's administration's policies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions a war on coal. Experts say the writing was already on the wall for coal's decline. Jamie Van Nostrand is the director of West Virginia University's Center for Energy and Sustainable Development.
The low-cost and plentiful natural gas has been, I know the term is used too often, a game changer, but it really did fundamentally change how we generate electricity in the United States.
Some regulations did play a role in driving up the cost of burning coal, but Van Nostrand says the falling cost of natural gas and renewable energy are the main drivers of coal generation displacement seen over the last decade. In the Ohio Valley alone, 34 coal-burning facilities closed from 2009 to 2017. But Allie, perhaps the biggest story in the Ohio Valley over the last decade has been the opioid crisis. What do the data say about overdose deaths?
While the Ohio Valley region saw about an 18% decline in deaths between 2017 and 2018, we are still seeing more than two times the number of overdose deaths that we saw in 2009.
Our reporter Aaron Payne focuses on addiction. Aaron, what's changed?
I think the most significant change over the past decade is in the ideas people hold about addiction. At the start of the decade, most people considered addiction to be a moral failing or a choice, but the numbers Allie talked about regarding opioid deaths represent family, friends, and neighbors. It's hard to find someone now who hasn't felt the impact of these deaths in some way. The unfortunate toll of the addiction crisis forced people to challenge their ideas about addiction.
Over the past 10 years, the Ohio Valley has been a battleground for the addiction crisis that made its way across the nation. Incomes grew at a slower rate compared to the rest of the country, and Appalachia is still grappling with how to make a just transition away from coal. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Becca Schimmel.
The Ohio Valley Resource is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. In this weekend's episode of Inside Appalachia, we focus on how recent and upcoming elections are playing out in states across central Appalachia. This morning, we'll hear an excerpt. Guest host Dave Mistich spoke with Kentucky Public Radio's Ryland Barton about how state races in Kentucky could play out in 2020 and what implications all this may have for the country as a whole.
So, Ryland, the big story there, of course, was the governor's race and Republican Governor Matt Bevin. He was unseated by Democrat Andy Beshear. That race was not called the night of the election and was drawn out for a little while. If you would, recap what happened there for us.
Right. So the Associated Press didn't call it, and Governor Bevin did not concede it for a while. Democrat Andy Beshear, the challenger, he ended up winning by just a little more than 5,000 votes, and that's what it showed on election night. Bevin said, you know, that's a close race, and so he requested this thing called a re-canvass, which is more or less a light recount. It's kind of requiring local election boards to hit print on their voting machines again and make sure all the vote totals add up to the same number that they sent to the Secretary of State's office. He had one other option to challenge this election, would have been something called an election contest, which would have meant the election would have been settled by the legislature. After many people told him not to do that, Bevin decided to not take that route, and when the canvas showed essentially no change in votes. There's just one extra vote that came in. He decided to concede the election.
I love the fact that we're blessed to live in a nation where things do transition in ways that much of the world wishes they had. There's not going to be people fighting in the streets.
And I think it's safe to say that coming into the race, Democrats there and elsewhere hoped that it could be somewhat of a bellwether for next year's elections, and particularly could tell us something about Trump's ability to take Appalachian states. But I think that it's fair to say that that's not what it turned out to be. Republicans swept the other executive offices there. So I think it's probably better to say that Bevin was simply unpopular and Beshear capitalized on that. Am I correct in saying that?
Right. I mean, I think that there's some takeaways that you can see. One is the further deepening of the urban-rural divide as Democrats continue to basically deep their hold on urban areas and start to pick up on some suburban areas. Some big key places you saw that in Kentucky's race were in northern Kentucky and then like the Bowling Green area. He also picked up Madison County, which is Richmond. And so it was just this combination of factors that led to Democrat Andy Beshear being able to win over Bevin. And the overarching thing on Bevin's side was just really that he had this very unlikable, aggressive personality that ended up really turning a lot of voters away from him. And a lot of, you know, whether it be Democrats who have started voting Republican a lot in recent years, that's something we've seen in Kentucky and in West Virginia, you know, especially teachers, getting people who otherwise vote Democrat out to the polls. Something we saw in the Louisville area in Jefferson County. Democrats ended up winning by more than 100,000 votes there. The last gubernatorial election when a Democrat lost only ran up the board by 37,000 votes. So there's big turnout for Democrats. Everybody's very hyped up. And so, again, looking ahead to 2020, you know, that's going to be a plan of any Democrats' roadmap of just trying to turn up the turnout. But Republicans certainly did very well in the down ballot races. They won by big margins. And so, you know, Kentucky continues to become an increasingly Republican state.
That was Ryland Barton of Kentucky Public Radio, speaking with our senior reporter, Dave Mistich. To hear more of this weekend's episode of Inside Appalachia, which looks at how politics are playing out in states throughout Central Appalachia, you can find the podcast at wvpublic.org. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:52. Areas of fog this morning, becoming partly sunny today, high temperatures in the 50s. Cloudy skies tonight with a chance of rain, lows in the 30s and 40s. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow with rain likely, highs in the 50s and 60s. WV511 is reporting a vehicle accident in Monongalia County on eastbound I-68, mile marker 1 near Morgantown. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Jaeger Airport CRW with flights to Orlando, Florida MCO beginning February 14th. More at JaegerAirport.com. 100 years ago, after a 70-year struggle that included marches and protests, to beatings, hunger strikes, and force feeding, women earned the right to vote. Today, much of that history is forgotten. 2020 marks the centennial of the ratification of the 19th Amendment to the Constitution. Across the nation, efforts are being made to remember the struggle. Eric Douglas sat down with Dr. Renata Poor and Rita Ray from the Kanawha Valley National Organization for Women to discuss why it's important to remember this history and some of the ways it's being commemorated this year.
Dr. Poor, can you tell me about the history of the suffrage movement and women's right to vote, especially when it comes to West Virginia?
The first demand for the right to vote for women came in 1848, so more than 70 years before it actually happened. And in West Virginia, when Congress passed the national amendment to the Constitution, it had to be ratified by 36 states. And West Virginia became the 34th state to ratify it.
Rita, can you tell me about some of the activities planned for this year?
We have a play that's being planned in production. We have a film series that's going on at the Flor Lee Cohen Cinema at Taylor Books in Charleston. And there's we're showing a film on Monday nights, repeated every Monday night during the month of January. One title, it's called One Woman, One Vote. And several of these, in addition to that, a Ken Burns documentary is lined up about the relationship between Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony. And that's a two-part series. And we have a film, Iron Jawed Angels, which is a feature film. And these all review the history of this struggle that took so long.
Talk about that for a second. Tell me why it's important to go back over this, to refresh people's memories about what happened 100 years ago.
I do not remember learning about the suffrage movement when I was in public school or in college. And I took a lot of history classes. And it's a good lesson, knowing about this struggle, how important it is for everyone to take advantage of their right to vote, and also to resist any efforts to curtail that and take away and restrict the access to the vote.
The United States, we pride ourselves on being the first democracy, and we forget that that first democracy didn't include women, it didn't include black people, it didn't even include people who didn't have property. It was a democracy for wealthy white men. And where we are now, those rights had to be fought for every step of the way. And we're still not really where we want to be. And I want to remind women that we still have a long way to go for rights like equal pay, for equal work, to deal with sexual harassment in the workplace.
I agree with you. I don't remember ever learning those sorts of things in history in school, that women were, you know, just for saying, I want the right to vote, they were axe handled down to the ground sort of thing. That was a bit shocking for me.
There was a lot of brutality during that time. And as Renata mentioned, when women were jailed and tortured, you know, with force feeding and very vicious treatment.
Is there anything we haven't covered that we want to talk about?
We're partnering with state agencies, the Women's Commission, the Secretary of State's Office, Culture and History. The Women's Commission is sponsoring two events at the legislature on January 24th and February 17th. So I hope people will look for that and come out for those events.
That was Dr. Renata Poor and Rita Ray speaking with Eric Douglas in the studio about the centennial celebrations of the women's suffrage movement and the right to vote. You can find a link to the comprehensive list of statewide suffrage centennial activities and listen to a longer discussion of the history behind the vote to ratify the 19th Amendment in West Virginia on our website at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.